Mohamed Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for pioneering microcredit, a banking system that enables the poor to borrow money without collateral or credit history. Over the past 30 years, Mr. Yunus's Grameen Bank has made small loans to women in Bangladesh and enabled them to lift their families out of poverty. He's come to believe that the power of the free market can be used to solve the problems of poverty. This new financial innovation is explained in his book, Creating a World Without Poverty. It has just been released in paperback by Public Affairs after it was in hardcover last year. And it is my pleasure to welcome him back to the show. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you.
And since I saw you last, haven't you opened a Grameen Bank branch in America?
Yes, there's a program in Jackson Heights in New York. It's called Grameen America. We are lending women in that area, low-income women, in the same way that we do in Bangladesh. Five women get together and form a group, and we lend money for individual income-generating activity.
And these are immigrant women because you say that for your plan to work, it requires working poor with a strong work ethic to succeed.
Work ethics is not just because they are immigrants. Also, we wanted to be in this section of the city because we wanted to see people who are not yet covered by welfare, because welfare laws get into a lot of difficulty on the way of receiving loans and earning income. So we thought we should start where these complications still didn't arise. But gradually we'll move into the areas where people are on welfare and will negotiate with the welfare authority that they can earn money and so on.
Doesn't it take a lot more money to fund a small business in the U.S. than it does in Bangladesh?
Yes, it does. I mean, our average loan in Bangladesh today, about $200. We lend out to 7.5 million borrowers, 97% women. Here, the average loan in Jackson Heights over the last 13 months is about $2,200. But $2,200 in the context of the U.S. economy is a very small amount of money.
What kinds of businesses are we talking about here?
Women taking money for running business of pet care, taking care of your dogs, your cats, and cleaning them. And also hairdressing. This is one very popular kind of activity they undertake. And also baby care, daycare centers, and many such things.
You've stressed any number of times that it's mostly women. Why? Don't men start small businesses?
They do. We have began with both men and women in Bangladesh 32 years back. Our ambition was to achieve 50-50 levels because women are left out from the whole financial system. So we wanted to encourage them to join Grameen Bank, and we achieved that. Then we saw money going to the family through women brings so much more impact in the family compared to the same amount of money going to the family through men.
The men were drinking away their profits?
Well, I don't want to be so specific. They're more like they want to enjoy themselves right away rather than wait for tomorrow and build up the economy of the family.
You've written favorably about how almost 2 million young Bangladeshi girls are working in garment factories. You see that as a good thing?
It's a good thing. For the first time, the girls got a job opportunity outside their homes. Otherwise, they would be sitting around at home or getting married very at an early age, or they will be just housemaids and going through lots of abuse of those housemaids. So this is a much better profession for them.
So we've established that microcredit banking has proven effective, but this book is about the concept of social business. What made you feel the need for another big idea?
I was not looking for another big idea. I was doing things which didn't quite fit into the existing framework of economic theory. I was running businesses where I don't own any shares at all. So people will be asking, why do you create businesses where you don't own a share, you don't make any money? Then I realized that I'm doing something which doesn't have any place in the economic theory, because in economic theory, business means business to make money. So what kind of business is this? Then I realized that one whole big part is missed out in the economic theory. That's what I call social business.
Well, can it still be described as capitalism if you eliminate the profit motive?
Yes, capitalism has nothing to do with the profit motive as such. It's about free market, individual decision making, individual's capacity to participate, and giving people options. So here, options are limited today because you are not giving all the options to the people. You only business you can run where you want to make money. So it's making money is a kind of a means for your life, and at the same time, it's an end by itself, which doesn't make sense. We said human beings are not just money-making robots. Human beings are much more wider in its perspective and in its all dimensions.
But don't investors still risk their capital and without profit? What motivates them to invest?
You see, that's the theory has done. The only motivation is making money. If I can help people by doing business, that could be an exciting motivation too. If I can reduce people's poverty, if I can touch other people's life, that's an exciting motivation.
So this is more philanthropic, you're saying?
It's all about happiness of people, how you feel happy. Making money is not the only thing in the world that makes people happy. There are other things to make people happy. That's a motivation. I want to be happy.
So you're saying that if someone were to be considering giving money to a charity, they might think about social business as a better way to go because they'll get more bang for their buck.
That's right. This is an option. This option is not available today. All you can do, you step outside of business world and become a philanthropist. I said, no, you don't have to always go and do the philanthropy business. You can also run a business by using your money and doing exactly the same thing. The difference between philanthropy and social business, in philanthropy, when you use the money, you achieve the goal, and money is spent out. It never comes back to you. But if you can design it as a social business, your money recycles and does the same thing over and over again, up to perpetuity.
Well, one incentive for philanthropy in this country is that you get a tax exemption. Do you get one if you invest in social business?
Not today, because social business doesn't have any room in economic theory and it doesn't have any room in its economic thinking. But if you think this is a good idea, then governments and politicians have to think about it. Why don't we give the same benefit that we do to philanthropy? Maybe more benefit to the social businesses because it becomes a permanent institution. So it's a question of next level of discussion that once we accept that, yes, social business is a serious business and it really solves the problem, it can address the issue of welfare, it can address the issue of health insurance for the people who are not covered by insurance as a social business. It could be health services in general. It could be poverty, income generation, and street children, or homeless people.
A listener wonders whether you believe that larger corporations like General Motors or Chrysler could be used as social businesses, could be run as social businesses.
We have just started a joint venture with Danone, which is again a large corporate body, multinational company, to create a separate social business. It's a Grameen Danone company. What we do in Bangladesh, we produce yogurt, which are fortified to sell it to the poor children who are malnourished so that they have this yogurt with the vitamin, iron, zinc, iodine. And then when the malnourished children eat this yogurt, enjoy it, but at the same time they improve the health condition. They become healthy children. So this is a social business.
It's a small subsidiary of a large, profitable corporation.
Yeah, sure.
My guest is Muhammad Yunus. His latest book is called Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, now available in paperback from Public Affairs. It was a New York Times bestseller when it was released in hardcover. How has the current global economic meltdown affected microcredit and the potential for social business structure?
On the side of Grameen Bank, we are not impacted by this financial crisis because we are not linked with the international financial system. Our money comes from the depositors' money. We take deposits locally and we lend money to the local poor people. So our deposit taking has not been impacted and our lending has not been impacted. But in the second round, our borrowers may be impacted by the slowdown of the economy in Bangladesh because of the slowdown in the global economy, because of the globalization impact that you have in the economy. Those microcredit organizations who are linked with the international financial system, they will be adversely impacted because as their activity shrinks, they will be having less money coming from international sources. And in the meantime, because of the upheaval that is going around in because of the crisis, if the exchange ratio goes against you in a developing country, which you borrowed money in New York money market, then you'll be paying a lot more than you paid in the past. So you'll be very badly affected in your operation. So a linkage with the international system will have adverse effect on microcredit, those who are impacted, those who are linked that way.
Well, now we're seeing huge corporations asking government for to be a little more philanthropic. In the past 20 years, conventional business models have done much to create wealth and lift people out of poverty in the developing world, in countries especially like China and India. Will many of these gains be wiped out, do you think, in this new economy?
If the big companies who would have their foundation window where they will put money in there, of course, because of the problem in their business, they will be having less money in their foundations, and foundations will be less open-hearted than they were before. This will be impacting generally. But at the same time, I would say while governments are being approached to help them out, bail them out, and the bailout money is being approved by the governments, these are the people who are at the center of the financial crisis. They played the role which created the financial crisis. But the real impact of the financial crisis is not on the businesses that you see. It's a real impact in the poor people's lives. If you look at the bottom half of the world's population, they will be the real victims of this financial crisis. Those who have billions, they will still have billions. Those who have millions, they will still have some millions left. It's the poor people who have lost the job, the income, and the food on the table. Those are the things. So when you talk about the bailout, the big businesses, big corporations, governments and societies should be thinking about bailouts for those people who became the victims without being participant to creating that crisis.
Well, you said earlier that microcredit will not be affected by the downturn because it operates separately from the regular economic system?
I was distinguishing between two types of microcredit. One, the type that we have in Grameen Bank, Bangladesh, and similar type that works similar to ours, who are not connected with the international financial system because we rely on the local money. We take deposits and we lend money to the poor people. So we are not in the international market finding money. But there are many NGOs who cannot take deposits because the law doesn't allow them to take deposits. They have to find sources of money in international money, in bankers and so on. So their loans and their activities would be affected because of the crisis in the financial system.
Can we even rely on governments to help in some of the poorer countries of the world where there isn't all that much money and there's also an awful lot of corruption, so the money goes only into the pockets of an elite few?
My suggestion in those cases is not to work through the government. If the government is corrupt, why are you encouraging them to become more corrupt if you are convinced that they are corrupt? So why don't you go straight to the civil society, people who are in the business, who are trying to create social business, not for making money for themselves, but they want to do things because they want to solve the problem of the country, and they're very dedicated people. They can create social businesses. So instead of giving these handouts to the governments or loans to the government, you start doing with the citizens' business and as a social business, as a grant-receiving institutions and so on, which you may have much better results than you can have with the government if the governments are corrupt.
Isn't that what NGOs have been doing?
NGOs, yes, that's why you have been supporting NGOs in globally. U.S. does it and European donor countries do it. But I'm suggesting a new variety, which is a social business. NGOs, you give money, they keep coming back to take more money because they run out of money each turn of the way. They will continue to work. I'm not saying don't give them the money. I'm saying the money that you're giving to the governments can go into the social business people who are creating businesses. These are businesses so that you can be sustainable. You do the thing. If you do the healthcare, you do the healthcare in a sustainable way. If you do the nutrition, you do the nutrition in a sustainable way.
There are many people who feel that one of the big problems in Africa especially has been that people have received charity, but there hasn't been enough creation of business that will sustain itself.
Because the machinery which brings money to them comes in a charity way, so they become charity-minded. The more you bring charity, people remain charity-minded because that's what you've been doing. The moment you start a social business, they will realize that, no, that's not the way it has to be done. You can do it in a business way. So at the end of the year, you can show your flows of money going back and coming back. Because now it's a two-way traffic. In charity is one-way traffic. Whenever you have a one-way traffic, you invite corruption. You invite inefficiency. So I'm not, again, saying against all kinds of charity has to stop. No, there's a room for charity. At the same time, there's plenty of room for social business. So let's explore that social business space that we can create.
Even in this country, there are big gaps. For example, we've never really worked out our health care programs in this country. And there's resistance for government getting involved in it.
Absolutely. Same way.
Now we're talking about whether government should get more involved in banking because somebody has to pick up all those bad loans.
I know. It's a kind of goes against the whole idea, philosophy of private sector businesses and capitalism that you promoted. So instead of governments getting involved in such things, you can think about many of the areas as social business. But in the crisis period, now that it is, the government is the only resource which is left out who can lift this whole economy into rejuvenate itself and move into it. But today we have to make a decision. If it happens again, government will have to respond the same way, or in the meantime, businesses will learn how to solve their own problems within the business format rather than getting into the habit of rushing to the government, give us the bail because we are in trouble. I don't think that's a good idea. So we must improve the system of capitalism that we are practicing, which suddenly abandons all its principles.
Mohamed Yunus is my guest. His latest book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, just released in paperback by Public Affairs. We'll continue after this.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're back with Mohamed Yunus, Y-U-N-U-S, the Grameen Bank. His Grameen Bank was the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006. His latest book is called Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism. It was published by Public Affairs in hardcover and now by the same company in paperback, and it was a New York Times bestseller. But do you have any sense that it's had a real impact? Are there people out there creating social businesses?
Yes, people become very interested, particularly among young people. They see a possibility of their making themselves useful in changing the world and taking a role in creating a world of their own choice. Because the other option that you grow up and join businesses, make money, doesn't excite them anymore because they have seen that making money part of it. And they want to do more useful thing that they feel that they need to do so that they can create their own world. So we have good response from the young generation, university students and college students. And at the same time, businesses. We are getting lots of businesses coming up and say, can we do some social business? So, yeah, we have done it with Grameen Danone. We have done it with Veolia, which is a water company. We are doing it in BASF, which is a chemical company. We have done it with Intel Corporation as a joint venture, as a social business. Many more companies come coming up. Even we are talking to Volkswagen to do a joint venture social business. And that. So that it's not only simply limited to young people who are trying to think about, imagine their own world. At the same time, very hard-nosed business people.
Because there's been a trend towards for-profit corporations taking more social responsibility. So you're tapping into that sense, at least with the ones that right now can afford to help?
Yes, corporate social responsibility is one part of it, but because the money used in corporate social responsibility is more goes into charity. It's something you keep doing, and sometimes it's again used for public relations purposes rather than for real benefit for the people.
And sometimes
we are giving them an option.
Well, but sometimes it's also because a company is embarrassed. Nike was forced to shut down sweatshops in third world countries. Many other companies have been forced to do the same because once it was exposed, they were rather embarrassed.
Yeah, that's one way they want to see. Sometimes companies themselves feel not so good about doing things what they do. They want to participate in doing good things that they feel, and it excites their own employees, excites their corporate existence that, yes, we can play a role in the society which people look up to.
A listener, Phil in Seattle, left a comment on our show page. He asks, would you ask Mr. Yunus to compare or contrast social business with nonprofits? Would he consider nonprofits to be social businesses? And do you set up your social businesses as nonprofits?
No, we set up social business as a business. We go through the business window, register ourselves as a business. The difference between the other type of business, conventional type of business, and us would be other type of business where investors come to make money. In social business, investors come to the social business to make a difference in other people's life, nothing for themselves, zero profit for themselves. So that's the distinction. But it's not a non-profit, because non-profit is usually a general description of charity organizations, foundations, NGOs, and those who are doing things to help people, but they are not expected to recover their cost. If they recover their cost, maybe they will recover 10%, 15% of the cost. We are talking about 100% recovery of all costs. There's no exception to that. This is, by definition, it has to be a business. There's no compromise on that. But business for a social goal.
What about the role of multilateral institutions like the World Bank? Do you think that they have they share the same goal as the Grameen Bank, don't they?
Well, on rhetorics, they say that, yes, World Bank says reducing poverty is our main goal. It's the fundamental objective of the bank.
They but don't seem to be doing a good
exactly,
job.
Exactly. When it comes
Why?
To the bill, because they are stuck with their own philosophy and where they are doing their own work style and so on. Like they concentrate on infrastructure building. They give loans to the government so that the infrastructures can be built. And they will justify how a highway, how a bridge is so important for the economy. As a result, it's important for the poor people. But that is a kind of a very indirect way of saying we are doing for the poor. There are other direct ways of helping the poor people. For example, if I was designing a project for the World Bank with the objective of reducing poverty and helping the poor people, I'll build the same road. But I'll make sure this road is owned by the local poor people. It's not just given to the government, okay, this is your road again. I said this, there will be a road construction or road maintenance company or road ownership company which will be owned by the local poor people so that you give the ownership to the people directly, they benefit from this road.
Do you think the World Bank should be shut down?
No, I don't think so. It should be shut down. They have a very important mandate. But all I'm saying, they're not performing the mandate in the proper way. There's much room to be improved. For example, we have been talking about microcredit for a long time now, 32 years, 33 years already. But even after convincing everybody in the world that this is an excellent idea to lend money to the poor people so that they can be on the driver's seat of their own life, but it's still not even 1% of World Bank portfolio of $20 billion a year goes into microfinance.
Why haven't we seen the microcredit model taken over by conventional banks? Because it's worked, hasn't it?
It has worked. This is a question you can always raise. While the conventional banks, but even the biggest of the banks, are crumbling, falling apart, like a house of cards, the microcredit programs all around the world are very robust, performing very well. They have not reduced, the repayment rate has not gone down. It's still 98%, 99% recovery. And right here in New York City, the tiny small program that we run still have the same 99.3% recovery rate as they started out with. So this is something we should consider. Why can't we have a financial system which includes everybody and benefit from that?
You studied and then taught economics. Didn't microbanking violate the basic principles of economics as it's taught in the universities?
It violates many of the things that we are given to believe is something which is untouchable. Like we have developed all our system almost doing all the opposite of what the conventional banks will do. Conventional banks go to the rich, we go to the poor. Conventional banks go to the women, men, we go to the women. Conventional banks go to the cities, we go to the rural areas.
And you came up with the idea after you'd left Bangladesh for a while and then returned?
I was studying in the USA as a Fulbright scholar. I did my PhD from Vanderbilt and started teaching in Middle Tennessee State University, taught there for 3 years, and then went back. And then I started the microcredit program.
Aren't theories of economics limited by presumptions about human nature?
That's precisely my point about the social business. The image of the human being that you create within the theory of economics is like a robot. Human beings are not robots. Human beings are not single-purpose elements that you see moving around on this planet. They are multidimensional beings. They are much bigger than what the economists have interpreted them. I said that's where economists went wrong and created a structure which create all these problems because you took a piece of the world, a human being, and created the economic theory. You didn't take the other parts of the human being. Your entire thing is developed on the basis of the selfishness of human being. I said selfishness is a part of human being, but there's a whole of human being. There is a selflessness part of the human being too, but you have not done anything with the selfless part of a human being.
Well, the selfishness part was developed by people like Ayn Rand and more recently, and Alan Greenspan, who was a believer in Ayn Rand's theories, wound up running the American economic system for a while.
Whole world is based on that same theory.
They've all been reading those same awful novels that Ayn Rand wrote.
You see, if we included these both parts of human being in our textbook, in our discussions, that their selfish part, their selfless part, young generation, young people will grow up. Which part of the element that you have in your heart to be nourished? If you nourish the selfless part, it will be nourished. If you nourish the selfish part, it will be nourished. Today, there's only one part that's a selfish part. So we are all nourishing the same old selfish part and become extra greedy as a part. That's what the financial crisis is all about, is the greed. It is turning the marketplace into a gambling casino. You have told this over and over again. But why did it happen? Nobody examines that.
We talked about the Danone subsidiary that you came up with, the Grameen Danone. But what about Grameen Telecom? How was that developed?
The idea was to bring information technology to the poorest people because I was very excited and still am very impressed by the emergence of this information technology in such a massive way, and it can change the whole world in very dramatically, and it can change the world of poor people very dramatically if you bring the knowledge, you bring the information, you have the marketplace to the information technology. So we thought, why don't we get involved? And we created this Grameen phone. Creating Grameen Telecom and give ownership to Grameen phone. And today, mobile telephone or the cell telephone in Bangladesh is absolutely everywhere. Out of a population of 150 million, there are 45 million cell phone subscribers in Bangladesh. You can imagine how widespread that business is.
But Telenor, which was an original participant, actually sold its shares to Grameen Telecom. It was uncomfortable being in this kind of business?
We signed an agreement with Telenor that we will run, we'll have its joint venture company, Grameen Phone, and they are one of the majority share of this company, and we are a minority share company. We are 38% and they are 62%. The agreement was after 6 years of operation, they will sell the majority share to Grameen Telecom so that we can convert it into a social business. That part they have not kept. They said this was an intention expressed, not something that we are obliged to do legally. So since they are not obliged to do legally, they said we are not going to do it. So as a result, we still couldn't convert it into a social business. But our hope is still there. Someday we'll take over the majority share, and these shares will be owned by the poor people.
Is it possible that you sometimes overestimate human generosity?
No. I thought since it's in a written agreement, it's not a generosity issue. That was an agreement written in paper. Now the interpretation given by the present executives of Telenor, they said, well, it's written, but it is not legally enforceable.
That's because you don't sign legal contracts. You depend on memorandums of understanding.
That's right. Yeah.
But so that puts you into a vulnerable situation at times.
That's true, yes.
So why do you do it that way?
Well, we are cautious now when we do the business. We make very clearly state what we do so that it's all legally enforceable. We don't get into the same kind of situation that we ran into in the previous case.
Do you see globalization as being a factor in this discussion? Or are you working on such a local level that it doesn't really matter?
No, for us it doesn't matter. But as globalization is a major factor because you have this whole earthquake in the financial crisis here in this country. But because of globalization, the tremor went around all over the world. So what has happened here, you passed on to every single nation, every single economy, whether they're a big economy, small economy, poor economy, rich economy, doesn't matter. So that is the factor because of the globalization.
Grameen started in Bangladesh. Now we have a Grameen Bank in Jackson Heights, Queens. Where else?
All over the world right now, the concept of it.
Mm-hmm. Other people have started them following your model.
Absolutely. In all over the world, every single country has that. But we are directly involved in certain countries, like we are directly involved in Costa Rica, in Guatemala, in Mexico, in Turkey, in China, in India, in Kosovo. These are where our staff goes and starts the program, and which we call Build, Operate, and Manage program. They provide the money. We go there and set it up and run it as long as they wish us to continue. Because we say that you don't have to go and argue whether it will work in your country, whether your country is just the right way to do it in microfinance. We said, you give us the responsibility. We'll go and do it for you. And as long as you're happy, we'll continue to do it for you.
Mohamed Yunus, his latest book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, now available in paperback from Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for letting me come in.